This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, and just about 20 minutes into hour two, about 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Mark Frostad. And, you know, yesterday, Al Stahl talked about Larry Molosso and Todd Cable at 55, equally tragic. I mean, it just seems like just a couple of I think he stopped riding, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and yeah, he's one of the names from Canadian thoroughbred racing that I think we all knew, and I don't think, the American horse player or fan realize, just how successful and, how dominant really a rider he was for a great portion of his career. This is a tough one, really, to conceive. Just 55. So we'll talk to Mark in a couple of minutes and pay proper respect to Todd Cable. And the horse that I think of first probably was Mobile. That was, I think, Mike Keogh. But, there's so many of the Samson horses, Soaring Free, certainly Full of Wonder, Grade One winner as well, and more. And we'll let Mark, Mobile. Cable definitely had, the most success of he and, well, no, it, no, Cable did. Cable broke his maiden, and won a bunch of graded stakes with him. It was best, really, at three and four was Mobile's best. It was a Chicken Dance homebred. Just looking at, did he win the, I can't remember if he won, did he win an Atto Mile at that time? In the aughts, as it were. He came down for the Met. He was in Pico Central's Metropolitan in 2004. Tried a bunch of different things with him, actually. Arlington Million, too. Jono Jones. Wow. No, he did not win the Atto. He was fifth in 2004, and he was second behind Leroy D'Animo in 05. Mobile. Yeah. And has gone on. He's had a useful stallion career. Son of Langfear. So anyway, just a couple of minutes. We'll talk to... Mark Frostad. A couple of the other races from the weekend that we haven't talked about yet. Let me get those in. We went through Dubai, got that done. From Turfway as well. And it really was a fun card. Even the non-stake action. And we talked to Brendan yesterday about Cave Hill, but Dream a Little Dream of You and Brad Cox, Full of Run Racing. This is the commissioner filly that won the Latonia And this is one of those spots where, you know, Cox had scratched from last weekend and ended up in this spot. And that, you know, that usually pretty clever. Been trying to reach Wesley Ward to get Wesley in to talk about his win, and I'm sure we'll get to him. But, you know, the King was only part of Wesley's nice day Saturday, because out of door, pretty good 3-year-old debut. Wins the Animal Kingdom, going the 6.5. And, you know, this horse has done little wrong, to be honest. Tried the Springboard Mile, but it, you know, you get the sense now that Wesley's going to, you know, keep him on the shorter side on turf. We'll see, or synthetic. But, you know, broke his maiden at Saratoga and then won that juvenile sprint at Kentucky Downs. Was a good third in the juvenile turf. And then they tried him on the dirt in the Springboard Mile, and he wasn't disgraced, but feels like he's a turf synthetic type. And he was ridden, Gerardo Corrales, you know, rode him with a lot of confidence. And what did he get for a fig? I'm curious. 84 buyer for out of door. So that pretty much comes back at the same level that of his best. He had an 85 at Kentucky Downs in that juvenile sprint. Visitant. This was Bill Morey, and I do have Bill Morey news actually. Bill Morey had three horses that were notable, I thought, going into the day, and obviously having to scratch Hush of a Storm, who is now expected in the Bluegrass when they draw tomorrow. This was a horse that seemed to be less likely. He had three horses. The other one was the Doro horse that. And I'm going to forget Pico Doro in the Animal Kingdom. That one seemed more of a possibility of his three Saturday than this one did. Visitant and won well at 8-1. This is a Go Sapper, part of a nice weekend for the Hill and Dale Stallion. And Williamson Racing, homebred of theirs, out of a Distorted Humor mare, Visitant, 5-year-old, and Deshaun Parker. This crushed my this was the Kentucky Cup Classic, and it right away killed the cross country. The cross country is just, it's maddening. It's just maddening. Easy enough to hit the $200 and $300 version. Not so easy to hit the ones that, you know, pay big money. Adventuring, Brad Cox won the Bourbonette Oaks and the Pioneer of the Nile Filly, a Godolphin homebred out of Questing. Very nice Questing. And you know, she went off at 5-2, and she was, if I'm not mistaken, what was she on the line? She was 3-1, so she was the near choice ahead of Into Vanishing, who went off as third choice. Olivia of the Desert, who Nick and I both liked. Yeah, you had a 40-1 shot run big here for Brissette. Spritz set the pace more or less, took over fairly early and ran a big race. Was not looking to lay down, to be honest. So next time we talk to Brad, we'll get an update on Adventuring, and 82 buyer for her. And it'll be interesting to see you know, what they want to do. You know, this was the filly we had mentioned on Friday when we were handicapping. She had took her three starts to break her maiden. All three starts at Fairgrounds came off the turf, one after another. But she kept getting better and better on the main track, and finally broke her maiden and received a nice number doing it. She got an 81, and then she comes back here on synthetic. So it feels like there's something here with to keep track of with adventuring. We'll find out what Brad's plans are going forward. And that got you to the stake. And like the king, 7-1, Drayden Van Dyke. And you know, when Hush of a Storm scratched, you know, this became, you know, personally, when I had to replace Hush of a Storm in the selections, I went right to him. I mean, why wouldn't you? He ran a good second behind Hush of a Storm. So why wouldn't he be a contender? And then proceeded to win well at $16. So, Hockey Dad showed up and ran well from that outside post. And, of course, you heard yesterday from Ian Wilkes about Hard Rye Guy. The trip in there. So there's your Turfway action, and they had a very good day. We'll turn our attention to north of the border, though, right now. And I wish I had better topics to talk about with Mark Frostad than the two that we're going to discuss. And the news of Todd Cable's passing at 55, Mark, this seems just heartbreaking. I appreciate the opportunity to have you, you know, pay tribute, appropriate tribute to really one of the best of his generation.
Absolutely, Steve. Nice to be with you. It's a sad thing that we've lost who was a terrific rider in Canada, you know.
I made note that it doesn't feel like he retired all that long ago. I mean, it's one of those names that, you know, you knew that he was off the racetrack, but, you know, to lose him at 55 just, you know, seems...
It's unbelievable. You know, I mean, obviously there are two different sides to this. There's certainly Todd Cable's professional life and his private life, his personal life, which, you know, I dealt with Todd mostly on a professional basis. As you know, the backside of any racetrack is sort of a separate entity from the rest of the world, and in that world, Todd Cable ruled supreme. He was a brash, cocky, very confident guy on the racetrack. He knew what he was about. He was a terrific athlete and an absolutely ferocious competitor. And that was the Todd Cable I knew and dealt with practically on a daily basis.
You know, he was a apprentice of the year, the sovereign winning apprentice, and then six-time leading rider or sovereign winner. And there's pretty much nothing in Canadian thoroughbred racing that, you know, that he didn't win.
That's right. He took Woodbine by storm when he came from Winnipeg. He was in the sort of the same kind of a deal as Sandy Hawley and some of the other riders, so Platts and so on. You know, I mean, he was certainly among the very best.
Six. I just looked this up. Six sovereign awards between 1992. And 2006. So you're talking about a 14-year period is obviously dominant, including the two Queen's Plates. I mean, talk about, you know, some of the horses and, you know, that we're gonna talk about Samson as well, Mark, in a minute. But talk about, you know, those victories with him and you know, that kind of a partnership.
Well, yes. I mean, he was certainly our number one rider, our go-to guy when I was with Sampson, and he did a great job for us. I mean, he rode some of the best horses that Sampson produced, you know, and was a big part of the team. I can remember, you know, traveling with him and those were heady days, you know, and we had a lot of fun. And when things go well, as you know, in this business, you better take advantage and enjoy it. So that's what we did.
Well, and of course, you won plenty of Queen's plates with other connections or other riders. But one horse that's probably not as well known among those is Scatter the Gold, right? 2000 when in the U.S. The Triple Crown season, you think about. The years and certain horses are just sort of ingrained and that's true in Canada too. I mean, when it comes to the Triple Crown winners, Dance Smartly, for instance. But Scatter the Gold, I will admit I don't have much memory of it.
No, well, he was a horse that did most of his running in Canada, obviously, and I think he had a start or two in Fairgrounds, but he ended up in doing very well. But he was a real long distance type horse. He was a marathoner, and he needed a very strong rider to get the best out of him, and certainly Todd provided that. You know, the horses knew when Todd was on their back. He expected a lot from them, and he got it. He got a lot of run out of them.
A couple of things, and I'm just looking him up because I, for whatever reason, this is a horse that probably should be. I guess because he only he didn't have a long career, but he was out of Dance Smartly.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, he was out of Dance Smartly, and his full sister was out of Dance Smartly, and she won the Queen's Plate the following year. So,
Scatter the Gold, unbelievable, and son of Mr. Prospector. And did he have much of a stallion career?
You know what? He was sold to Japan.
Oh, there we go.
He was a bit one-paced and a real marathoner. And, some of his best horses in Japan wanted to go 2 miles and stuff like that. So I don't think he would have done all that well in North America.
That's funny. And I'm just looking... Yeah, he had also followed up with a Prince of Wales win, so he made a Triple Crown try.
He was third in the final leg. Mile
the turf.
And a half on turf, but you know. And after, I don't believe he ran after that.
No, he didn't. He did not. And is this right that he broke his maiden in the Queen's Plate?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
You ran a maiden in the Queen's Plate.
Yep. Well, he should have broken his maiden to start before, and he's going a mile and an eighth on the turf, but he just missed there, and he came back, and he just powered over the competition in the plate.
Unbelievable. Mark Frost had with us. We're paying tribute to Todd Cable. And, you mentioned the physical strength and what kind, in terms of the kinds of horses and the things that he did, particularly well and off the pace, on the pace, short, long, turf, dirt,
Oh yeah, no, he was a great judge of pace, and And as I said, he was a competitor, and he got the best out of those horses. I think one of the best races I ever saw him ride was early in 1997 in Hollywood Park when he was second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It wasn't our horse, but it was a standout ride.
And that was on Dawson's Legacy.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. This one's tough to take when you look through, and I'm just looking at some of the other big names. I mentioned as we were reaching for you, I talked about Mobile, of course, with Mike Keogh, but Soaring Free, virtually $2 million in earnings for you guys.
Yes, and you had a big string of wins with Soaring Free in that the year he was Horse of the Year, and ended up. I think the culmination was the Idle Mile. I don't know if it was called the Idle Mile then or the Woodbine.
Yeah,
Mile,
but it was still the Atto. Yeah, it was still the Atto. That 2004, and he ran other than the Breeders' Cup and at Lone Star, where he actually ran very well.
Yes, that Lone Star, Breeders' Cup, I remember going in and thought, well, you know, we're going to have a nice firm turf, but because it rained on the Monday and the races weren't till Saturday, but I guess that track was built in a low area, and it was still wet by the Saturday, and that horse didn't really handle a soft going.
Well, and only beaten two lengths and change for everything by single terry.
I believe that horse also won at Keeneland. I think he won the Shakertown twice.
Won a little bit of everything.
No, he traveled around a bit. Yeah, no, he was a nice horse.
Gelding that earned over $2 million and 1.9 of it with Todd Cable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, Todd, he got along very well.
Well, Mark, it a very tough one to,
well,
to
it is. It is.
Accept.
We lost another jock, not too long ago was Donnie Seymour, and he was another Western jock that was one of the top riders, It's a bit young for these guys to be checking out, you know.
Very much so, and I think I tried to reach you to talk about Don as well. It's one of the obligations, obviously. When we pay tribute to the people that make the game go.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
Mark, similarly, I can only imagine, the reaction from you when the word came that Samson was going to wind down the operation. Some thoughts about the legacy that they leave.
Well, what a great operation it was, and as you know, if to be in this game long term, you've got to have a real passion for the business. And certainly Ernie Samuel and Liza Samuel and Tammy Samuel Belaz all had that real passion for the business. Not so much so after their passing, but I'm sure that all the people that were involved after that, things change and priorities change, and unless you're really stuck into the business, it's probably a good thing to get out.
We spoke at the time of Tammy's really unfortunate passing, and if it wasn't for, I think it's fair to say, if she does not get sick and be taken as prematurely as she was, that we're probably, that Samson continues.
No question in my mind at all. No. Tammy was a real, she just loved the game and was fully committed to it. And you either you either really love the game or you don't. You know, you can still enjoy it and so on, but you've got to have that passion to keep, you know, going through the good times and the bad times.
Well, and of course, part of it is, you know, an association with you know, horsemen like you and Jim Day, and you know, you made it as much possible. They were buying and then breeding, but you know, you were the one that was conditioning.
That's right. Yeah. No, and we had a terrific team together, and we had a lot of fun those years.
Mark, not the reason I wanted to be calling, but still a pleasure always to hear from you. And
well, nice to speak with you again, Steve. Too. Yeah.
Mark Frost, that everybody, absolutely one of the legends, Mark, and you know, there were about two people to think of to have this conversation, and they're both Hall of Fame legends, Roger Atfield and Mark Frostat. I mean, these are some of the greatest of you know, the last couple of generations,
Well,
it's so hard.
All
no,
right.
Not at all. Mark, be well, and we'll talk soon under happier circumstances.
All right. Let's do that.
You got it. Mark Frostat, everybody. Yeah, I mean, it's very tough to you know, the jockey community. There's some very difficult burdens that seem to really kind of haunt riders. It's a demanding profession, to say the least. Todd Pletcher is standing by, I think, behind us on his way from Palm Beach Downs back to Gulfstream to make some decisions, some short lists on the two-year-old in training sale for tomorrow at Gulfstream. Todd, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
You know, Saturday you won another Florida Derby.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
this one, I got to say, and I'm just guessing, there's got to be some real point of pride for what you did with this horse in terms of backing away and regrouping, going to the allowance, and kind of kicking it old school with him.
Yeah, we did. You know, we've always felt like this horse had potential, and he reminded us a lot of where we were with Vino Rosso kind of at this point of his career. We knew there was more talent there. He was not completely focused in his races and was sort of figuring things out. And, you know, the allowance race was really what he needed, I think, to get back on course. And the blinker certainly, I think, helped him and sped up that process. But, there's always been potential there, and we just felt like we needed to get it out of him. I wasn't sure it was going to happen this soon. I told, you know, the Viola team, I said, I think this horse has a big win in him. I'm just not sure exactly when it's going to be, and thankfully it was March 27th.
There's a couple of parts of this, and, you know, after the Remsen, and then during the off season, for starters, what, you know, how did he change? I mean, is he still growing? Did he grow quite a bit, or, you know, does he still have more, you know, more to fill out?
He's actually, you know, he's a solid specimen. He's always been a well-built colt that carries good condition. You know, it was more about mental growth than physical growth for him. He's always been, you know, very solid physically. We just needed to sort of get his mind more focused on business and getting comfortable, getting some kickback, getting comfortable being inside of horses, in between horses. And, you know, to me, that was the most important part about what he did in the Florida Derby was, despite being down inside and taking some kickback, when he turned up the backstretch, he was able to maintain his position and then kind of gradually improve along the way, where, you know, I think three starts ago, he would not have been willing to do that.
You started the year in the Sam Davis, and I know that everybody was like, he bombed. Tampa is such a funky place, and you talk about running inside. He was drawn inside, and you got the softish surface. You've got kickback, and it did seem like he was getting untracked late, and I didn't think it was nearly as bad an effort as people wanted to make out.
I totally agree. I think if you look at the last eighth of a mile, he was finishing as well or better than anyone else. He had just unfortunately left himself in an impossible task at the top of the stretch. But he did finish with good energy, and you know, just his greenness showed in the early part of the race, and he was unable to put himself in a position turning for home where he had a chance to win. And that's what he was able to do in his last two starts that made such a big difference.
Then came the allowance, and he wins off by 11 and did it, you know, really stylishly. And it doesn't matter, you know, if he was facing tomato cans or not. There was also, out of that race, there was plenty of discussion about the figure and trying to evaluate the level of performance from a speed standpoint. I don't know if I've ever had this conversation with you. What is your philosophy on tracking figures, and you know, our Rags and Thurgraph and so forth, and Beyer? How much do you rely on it, and how much do you use it as part of your evaluation process of where you are with a horse?
Well, I look at the figures. I don't always let them guide me into what I feel like the right thing to do the horse with is. And you know, in his case, it's a very difficult race to put a figure on when he won as easily as he did, and Irad geared him down the last 100 yards or so. So, you know, he won with something left in the tank, and a race like that, it's kind of hard to gauge a figure on. But I look at Ragazin, for example, and what I like about the pattern he's on right now is he's showing couple points improvement each time, and now he's run fast enough to suggest with another, you know, baby step forward that he's in the mix, and that's kind of what you're looking for, is that positive trend. And I mean, you wouldn't have to look at any of the figures to see that his last two races in particular have been steps forward.
No doubt. And part of that's the blinkers, too. I mean, the added, you know, a little bit of added focus that's got him, you know, if not involved early, at least, you know, at least with less to do. And, you know, he's only got three or four horses in front of him, essentially.
Right. Now, they definitely have made a difference, and they've got him a little more focused, a little more into the game early on. And that's important. And I think as much as anything is he's starting to put it all together himself. So it's a combination of many factors that are hopefully leading towards him becoming better and better.
Do you tinker with them at this point, or and with the cup at all in the mornings? Do you try to, you know, talk about the process that you use to, you know, ahead of the allowance race?
No, I mean, we worked him in blinkers prior to that, just to make sure he was accustomed to wearing them. But you know, he doesn't need blinkers on a daily basis, and I think you get a little more pop by not putting them on all the time. But
interesting,
we won't tinker with the cup. We'll leave him just the way he is. He's two for two with those on, and we'll stick with that.
Outstanding. Well, and there's got to be, you know, tremendous satisfaction for the Viola team to, you know, to have a homebred do this.
Definitely is. I think that's always extra rewarding, and so it was a great win for the whole team.
You've already laid out, you know, your approximate plan going forward toward Derby, and you know, feels like this, you know, sets him up to be a real player. And I'm going to fold in the performance of Sainthood as well up at Turfway. And then, of course, this weekend, you've got a pair lined up for the Wood. And I want to get a reaction from you, Todd, about how much you've potentially changed the focus in terms of having these contenders be more ready in late March, April, May, you know, rather than putting the press on and you know, getting, you know, the whole system has changed, obviously, with the points. And, you know, there's more points later in the game as opposed to the graded earnings. But it also seems like you're not squeezing the lemon early with your classic candidates.
Well, we try to look at each horse as an individual, and you know, sometimes you just have to play the hand that's dealt you. But, you know, in some cases, you know, we're not going to push a horse like Known Agenda, who's a curling out of a mare that ran long on the grass and synthetic. We're not going to gear that horse up for 4.5, 5 furlong maiden races. Even though he was actually, you know, a baby that came into us pretty early at Palm Beach Downs last year. But we took our time with him, and it's great when you train for owners like the Violas who are patient and take the long approach. So we brought him along methodically, but we also got a good foundation into him as a 2-year-old, and then, you know, we went to Tampa as plan A. When that kind of didn't work out, then we had to call some audibles and regroup. So, you know, you can have all the plans you want, but sometimes, you know, the everything has to fall into place. And, you know, going back to Super Saber, when he was able to win the Derby, really nothing went the way we hoped it would until the last 3 weeks after the Arkansas Derby. He just had, you know, the best 3 weeks of his life at that time. So some of those things you can control, some of them you can't. You always have to be ready to make some adjustments. But, yeah, definitely, you know, with these type of horses, we're not looking to crank them up in April and May of their 2-year-old years. We're trying to, you know, look at the longer approach. And a lot of the kind of horses that we're trying to purchase at the yearling sales were, in his case, he was a homebred, but we're also looking at classic type horses that hopefully are going to excel at that mile and an eighth to a mile and a half distance.
Absolutely. Well, and on that topic, let me stay with 3-year-olds before we touch on a couple of other, not just from the weekend, but the last couple of weeks. That's Sainthood. And I'm going to tell you, I reached out to Dave Norton on Saturday morning, and I said, Dave, that Sainthood, I said, he's going to run big today, and this horse has got potential to impact this race. And Dave said, well, he's doing okay, and, you know, he talked about his works. But I had a feeling that he was okay, and you had to be very pleased with that effort, because he may have actually been best in there, Todd.
Yeah, we got a little unlucky at the top of the stretch, got in some traffic, and, you know, I thought he was finishing the strongest at the end, so it's encouraging. He's trained consistently well without being super flashy, and with his pedigree, we certainly thought that he could take to the synthetic, so we were really happy with his effort and performance. Just a little disappointed, I think, with a little cleaner run, he might have gotten the job done.
Well, exactly, and of course, at that point, your hands may be forced. I did see where Elliot Walden talked about maybe, you know, taking some time with him. What's your feeling, you know, 40 whatever it is, 72 hours later, right now at this point?
I spoke briefly with Elliot, and we took the approach that let's just, you know, see how he bounces out of it, see how he trains, and he does have points that usually are enough to get you in if you want to, but you know, we want to see how he's doing and how he trains, and freeze him at Churchill time or two, and we probably won't make a decision until a week or so before the Derby.
I want to ask you about this. You know, you talked about the pedigree. He's a Mishawish out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare, and you know, so the synthetic made total sense. But he also could be a horse that's going to be, you know, long term might like it long on the grass as well. This was the horse that got a lot of play because he was the only horse you sent to Fairgrounds on Risen Star Day, and then he snatches a win away from Cassie in that Dolder Grand in dramatic fashion when he broke his maiden. And what was that about that you shipped him from Palm Beach Downs to Fairgrounds?
We were just really stacked up on maidens at that time, and several of them were win stars. So Elliot and I were looking for some options on how to kind of divide these horses up, and it just worked out where it was easy to transportation wise to get to the fairgrounds, and you know, we were trying to split some of these babies up, and you know, if you can get your maiden broke, it puts you in a position to, you know, to run back in races like you know, the Jeff Ruby, and so that's ultimately what we were trying to accomplish, and we got lucky. We split him and Promise Keeper up, and Promise Keeper was able to break his maiden, and even though it didn't work out in the Tampa Derby, but we were able to, you know, get their maidens broke and then put them in positions that if they're good enough to move forward, and so that was the thought process behind it.
Pretty crazy. And of course, you know, if he loses that photo to Dolder Grand, he probably, you know, he probably doesn't show up.
Wouldn't have had enough earnings to get into the body originally. So,
exactly.
You know, yeah, we that was a great head bob. I honestly thought he'd gotten beaten, but you know, it was fortunate we were on the right side of it.
Nice. Well, we'll watch and see and wait for a decision on Sainthood, but he does seem to have plenty of upside. Talk about the two that are likely for the wood. Where do you stand, Bourbonic and Dynamic One?
Well, they're both colts that need to step forward. They need to improve. You know, Dynamic One disappointed us in his first start. He trained great. He got away poorly from the one hole, and then you look back and drew two bad posts at Gulfstream, and in his first start at Gulfstream, he was second to Greatest Honor. So I thought, considering he basically had a non-effort in his debut, that was a move forward. Then drew a bad post the second time we ran him at Gulfstream, and in retrospect, probably would have been better off scratching. But anyways, he made a pretty big middle move that day and finished fourth. So we said, you know what, let's go back to New York. We'll try the mile and eighth maiden there, and if he's successful, it puts us in a position to try the wood. It was a pretty slowly run race. Early fractions were crawling a bit in the aqueduct race, but I thought he showed some improvement, and it's a horse that's always trained with good horses and has always been very good in the morning. So we're optimistic. He just needs to kind of like with known agenda, he needs to kind of mentally put it all together. So we're hoping that he can make that move forward. And Bourbonic, I think, is a horse that'll appreciate the distance, needs to take a big step forward. As you know, Calumet loves taking chances with these kind of horses and Derby point races. So we're going to give him our best try.
Excellent. Well, best of luck there. We might be back talking to you on next Monday. Let me ask about another three-year-old, our friend Betsy Tarr on Twitter. Yesterday, when I mentioned that you were going to probably join us at some point during the week, she wanted to know about Unbridled Honor and what is next for him. I saw that he worked the other day.
Yeah, he's doing really well. I spoke to team Whisper Hill, Mandy Pope, and Todd Quas. We decided we're going to give the Lexington a try on April 10th.
Very interesting. So maybe a little Lexington Preakness concept?
That could be in play if he runs well. He too is another one that we like the way he trains, and he's still kind of figuring things out. But I feel like that with a little improvement, he's right there. He ran kind of a very similar race in the Tampa Derby to what Known Agenda did in the Sam Davis. He just unfortunately got himself shuffled back a little too far, but the last 16th of a mile, he was kind of picked it up and was rolling down the lane. So hopefully continue to progress.
Well, let me also talk about a couple of turf runners, and I think maybe you got to sit down. And when it came to the Muniz last week versus now I'm going to forget which stake it was Saturday. Was it the Orchid? Yeah, it was the Orchid, right? Yeah, the
right.
Orchid. You got let IRAD know that we discussed this yesterday with Migliori. Don't look back. There's definitely a horse coming. What was that? What was he thinking looking back like that?
Well, the way he explained it to me was, you know, the first time he looked back was to see if anyone was coming, and once he saw someone was coming, he was trying to let the filly kind of drift out a little bit so the filly could see that she had some competition coming, and he thought when he did that that she came over and made a little bit of contact with the filly on the outside, and then the next time he said he was trying to do it again, but he was, you know, afraid that he was coming out too much and didn't want to cause any contact and potentially an objection. So, I think wasn't what he really wanted to do, and he got probably a little bit caught up in overthinking it a little bit. And look, he's given us some tremendous rides at the meet, and I'm sure that's one he'd like to have a do-over.
I figured I'm kind of just poking some fun, but that was tough, undoubtedly. But Colonel Liam, in the meantime, where's the ceiling with him, Todd? I mean, he just seems to do whatever assignment comes his way.
Yeah, I mean, he's been terrific, and physically, he's just you could just see him continuing to develop and fill out and train better and better, and it's exciting to see him doing so well and bounce out of the race at the fairgrounds in great order, and so we're looking forward to going to Churchill, and happy to have him in the barn. He's a really cool horse, great personality, laid back, just, you know, he's a trainer's dream.
Well, plenty of other nice performances over the last few weeks, and certainly through the winter. And I'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge Basin starting off the season so smashingly.
Yeah, that was great. I thought he was determined, kept fighting, and I felt like we had him ready, but we didn't really have him fully cranked up. So I was glad to see him. Him get the job done, and was a banner day for Liam's Map, having three stake winners at Gulfstream on the day. So that was that kind of added to the day for the Viola team, and it was great to see him have really just stamping himself as you know, an exciting young stallion.
I was going to bring that portion of the storyline up too. You helping reinforce St. Liam and his bona fides as a stallion. And speaking of which, before I let you go, some thoughts about the 2-year-old in training sale marketplace, OBS, weeks ago, yesterday, the Breeze Show, and what has caught your eye?
Well, I think the message at OBS was I think the market is healthy, and there was strong demand for a lot of horses, and the RNA rate was down, and you know, just basically a year ago there was a lot of unrest during when the pandemic started, and weren't even sure we were going to have the OBS sale and didn't have the Gulfstream sale, and so. You know, it looks to be a healthy market. There's a lot of strong quality horses in this the sale coming up tomorrow, and certainly appears as most of the major buyers are here, even internationally. People are coming in, so I think it's brings some optimism to the state of the industry.
No, I think that's a, the dead on assessment. That just seems to be the there's a pretty upside a good atmosphere. I talked to Jessica Martini earlier, and obviously when we went back to OBS with Tom Ventura and everyone, knock on wood, just feeling pretty good. Well, Todd, you got to be feeling pretty good heading toward Kentucky with another big opportunity for a Derby winner, and coming off of a terrific winner at Gulfstream, and ready for Keeneland, and Aqueduct Turf starts on this week. Belmont coming soon, getting to be back home in New York too. So continued success. We'll talk soon, and probably see you next in Kentucky.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. Pletcher Racing, everybody, on Twitter, if you want to follow Todd and interact with Todd. And after years of the of the Not the Toddster account that provided so much amusement for so long, is it that active anymore? Does it still the Not the Toddster? It's still, I just went to it just to see. It's still active. That's pretty funny. Todd Pletcher. Andy Sterling is going to join us, and Andy actually not far away in Saratoga for a couple of days ahead of that highly anticipated Aqueduct Turf season, as I mentioned, with the tarp coming off the grass, and looking forward to it getting going, and of course the Wood Memorial card on Saturday that they'll draw tomorrow. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. You home? You're home in the real home, Saratoga.
Okay. Good to know. I was a little confused when I woke up this morning. Thanks for clarifying.
I just had Todd Pletcher, and we talked about the Wood, and it's funny, the winter season ends, and yet just days later the very short Aqueduct spring meet rolls in. The turf season portion, to have those turf courses there and available. I mean, it's so anticipated, and we'll hopefully take advantage as much as possible the next few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry we're not racing for another week here, to be honest with you, but it's kind of a short meet, only 11 days of racing before we go to Belmont, sort of earlier than usual, right? Because normally we'd go, I would think, Belmont Derby weekend, but we're going the weekend before.
That's right. I'd forgotten that, actually. Well,
yeah. But, I mean, a couple turf races on Friday, and hopefully there'll be more on Saturday, and I'm sure the next two, it's actually not 11, oh, it's 11 days, right, because we're on Thursday as well. In the next 2 weeks, I imagine, barring terrible weather, and the forecast for the next week looks okay, at least at this point. We'll watch turf racing, so looking forward to that. And obviously we'll have plenty at Belmont as well. So it's a good time of the year.
Thursday, Friday, and just pulled up the Friday card, the 4th and the 6th on the grass, and we're off and running. Certainly the Wood card will be as anticipated as anything so far this year in New York. Todd just talked about his two contenders. The race got a nice boost, Andy, with Prevalence committing to it last week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, obviously he's a horse that a lot of people, not with my name, think is a legitimate Derby contender, but we'll find out more about him. I mean, I guess they have to make a decision with him whether or not they want to press forward and try to qualify him for the Derby, or maybe take some more time and see if he's more of a Preakness type horse, or even a horse that's better shorter. But I understand it's what people do at this point of the time of the year. I want to see if they have Derby horses. I saw that the Dolphins not going to be running one of their horses proxy in the Derby. I wonder if he has an issue or something, but surprised because he's obviously qualified to go in, and I don't think he's run that badly in his races. But he didn't run well in the Louisiana Derby, so that is fair. And we'll see. I mean, personally, I think it's just very hard to judge. But obviously, Prevalence has run relatively fast races for a horse that's run just twice. His debut was smashing at 7 furlongs. You get a high 80s buyer and run like that. He didn't really improve in his second start going longer, where he beat a subpar field, but he still ran a respectable figure as well. And whether or not he ends up being a horse that is effective at a high level going longer, well, I guess it's time to find out. My guess is that he ends up being a horse that is more likely for races like the Woody Stevens and Alan Jerkins, and that's not a knock, that's a compliment, because he may be that good. I mean, obviously he ran well enough in his first race that it doesn't take a huge amount of improvement to qualify for some bigger races, but I wonder if he's a horse that will ultimately prove better going shorter.
Oh, well, to answer one question there that came that you mentioned, Proxy's okay. I had Stidham yesterday, and when that came up, they don't feel an obligation to, to push forward with him.
Well, they're smart. I mean, he wasn't going to win the Derby. He's a nice horse, but his last race wasn't good. I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see when and where he shows up. Hopefully sooner than later. Obviously, people are saying with his pedigree being a half to Michelin, they could try Turf. My guess is that they would like to at least exhaust some of his dirt opportunities before going to Turf with him, but we'll see. I suppose they could try this. Listen, I mean, with a race like the Belmont Derby, they could certainly consider bringing him, assuming he's fine, and running him in a race like the Pennine Ridge or even on Derby Day in the American Turf or whatever, and
yep,
see if he's legitimate on the turf. And if he is, you've got, big purse races at Belmont and Saratoga that you could run him in. So why not? I mean, I guess those races make going to the turf more attractive. They're both grade ones. They're both in the grass. And obviously they're not, at this point, sire-making races. But I don't really think it's realistic to consider him a horse that was going to win any of the classic grade ones in the dirt. So it makes a perfect amount of sense. And, being that in all likelihood they'd probably stand him anyway if he had stallion value, so be it. I mean, listen, I think that's one of the positives of those turf races.
The two Chad Browns, Risk Taking, Crowded Trade, Wayburn, of course, from the Gotham as well. Brooklyn Strong trying to kind of jump in at the quarter pole a little bit. Nikki the Vest, Jonathan Thomas, the New York bred, and Candyman Rocket trying to regroup after the disappointment in Tampa.
Not a big day of reading for you yesterday, huh? What happened?
No,
you weren't feeling well. Nikki DeVest is out of the race. Dave Grant reported on it about a day ago.
Okay, good. All right. I did not had not heard that, and that's too bad. I feel bad for Jonathan.
Well, you can call him and console him if you want. I'd get off the phone if you want to call him now. I'm okay.
What do you make? What's the read on Chad? I going into the weekend when it came to the future wager, I really made a case that any of Chad's were going to be, potential overlays in the future wager, and all 25-1 and north, and they've all got they certainly have they're eligible to run.
Well, let me ask you a question: if you bet both of Chad's horses to win in the wood.
Yeah,
and you bet highly motivated to win the Bluegrass, and then with any winnings, you parlayed it on the Derby at whatever price they were. Do you think you'd get a bigger or a better or worse result than if you bet on the futures pool?
That's fun. Let's see. What did
let
me
know,
see?
I find the futures wagers to be foolish and frivolous. I mean, it's amazing that there were people that were betting into the pool before on horses in the Florida Derby before it was run. You think about the fact that, and I didn't look at the final pool, but they're usually fairly big, $250,000, maybe more. That Greatest Honor was 5-1 going into the race, which in and of itself is preposterous, because if he won the race, he wasn't going to be under 3-1. So I have no idea why anybody would have done that. But forgetting about that, and then he comes out, he closed at 9-1 because essentially, I guess he was, 15-1 after the I don't know what percentage of the pool was bet late. I don't know who would bet a nickel on him after the race. I mean, I guess if he was 30-1 and you want to bet him after the race, that's fine, but he wasn't going to be, and I just don't know why anybody's betting into a pool before the race is run, especially when you can bet after it's run.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, in retrospect, not including Known Agenda, was a mistake. I guess he didn't have Derby points. Maybe that was the thinking there. But as one of the choices in the Florida Derby, there was an argument he could have been in there regardless. You know, then the pool, the field goes down to 5-1. I mean, I suppose one scintilla of it is on the horse that won the Jeff Ruby, but essentially it's all because of Known Agenda, which is understandable. Now, I don't know who thinks that taking 5-1 on him now in the Derby, considering it seems highly unlikely he'll be under 8-1 in the Derby. And 8-1 is a short price in the Derby. I don't mean that as a criticism of him, but I don't know what about him in his 94 buyer suggests that the likelihood that that's going to be a stick-out number that's going to result in being 5-1 in a 20-horse field. I don't know what people are looking for. And, you know, I understand, you know, 26-1 on highly motivated, I imagine, risk trading and waiver and crowded, or is it crowded trade, were much, much higher. That's fine, but I don't really think they're particularly good prices. I mean, I don't, you know, but listen, each their own. I'd rather wait for Derby.
Crowded trade closed at 38-1 and risk taking 30-1 and highly motivated 25-1.
Right. What do we think the likelihood that all three of them will be in the Derby? It's pretty insignificant, right?
Well, I would say crowded. I mean, all crowded trade has to do is.
It's not a question of what you have to do. These are connections that qualified cloud computing to the Derby and ways to the Preakness. These are not connections
smart.
That are going to go in the Derby because they qualify.
Understood, but
I don't understand. I mean, essentially, probably the only way there's any chance that all three would run was if they ran 1-2 in the Wood and won the Bluegrass, or maybe a good second in the Bluegrass with highly motivated.
I don't see why that's an outrageous proposition.
Well, it's a 300-1 shot, but go ahead. What do you think the exact? What do you think the right price for the exact of the quinella of crowded trade and risk taking is?
That's a great question.
Seems like a $50 quinella to me at best.
I don't know.
I mean, I suppose it's possible, but even then, are you so sure they'd run all three? Maybe they would. I don't know. It's not like I've had an extensive conversation with either Chad Brown or Seth Harmon about this, but I think it's just logically. They don't, you know, but maybe they would. I don't know.
It's a good problem to have. Where they are right now,
right.
No doubt about it.
I don't really know. I don't know the answer. That also doesn't seem like a particularly high likelihood. It seems possible, but you know, we'll see. I mean, they will be some of the choices, no doubt. I don't know who will be favored in the Wood. I don't know who David will make favored in the Wood. Let's actually ask him. I'll text him now and see.
I'm curious. That's a great question. Obviously, the presence of prevalence, you know, tilts the scale somewhat, to say the least. That's interesting. That's a fun question. Meanwhile, Andy, as you do that, let's also fold in the early expectations toward the Carter and the Bayshore and the Gazelle. Should be really everything seems.
Mischievous Alex. He's working well in Florida.
Yep.
I know. I assume he'll probably be favored. Mind Control. I'm not really sure who's running. The Speed Horse is running in their chateau. To be honest, I don't really know who's running. Do you know?
I had Mind Control, Mischievous Alex, you mentioned Chateau. I think Super Stonehenge is coming.
Who is he?
That's Mrs. Weber and Cassie. Nice spites down, Gelly.
Other than you being friendly with Charlotte Weber, is there some reason that he should be taken particularly seriously?
He's okay.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about him.
He's okay. He's
the best bird in the country, but I don't know anything about him.
He's okay. He's respectable. I wonder if Al the Gold and Tally Lynch will run Wendell Fong.
I'm looking right now. Basin ran last weekend. Chateau Heichel, yeah. I don't think he's running. Neos, I doubt he's running. Mind Control, Mysterious Alex, Language like, okay, ran last weekend. Who is Shake, Shake, Shake Me Up for Peter Miller? Is he coming? I guess Shoplifted could come. I don't have any idea if he is. Super Stonehenge, I see. Just lost a race at Tampa. Pelican. Lendo Fong, Wicked Trick.
Lost to the ill-fated Zenden.
And, I mean, the Gazelle. I mean, the Gazelle, it looks like its search results race to lose, right?
Yes.
I mean, it just doesn't seem like there's, I mean, looking through the entries there, Orson ran last weekend, or I'm assuming that Chad is running Malathot at the Ashland?
At, at Caneland. I didn't even get to that with him.
You did?
No.
I assume she'll be a very short price, and it may not be a very big field in the Gazelle. The Bayshore could be interesting. I know that Drain the Clock is coming.
I wondered what, it's funny you bring him up, because I wondered where Joseph was with him.
Since he ran in the Mountain of Youth, he's been saying he was running here.
That's
I know Shug had mentioned maybe running that maiden winner, the half to Code of Honor, bears watching, who ran impressively to break his maiden down at Gulfstream, but I'm not really.
That'd be nice.
I rely on the racing office end or Dave Grenning. I don't know if I've seen anything.
Well, it should be a terrific wood day. This always gets
coming down.
I'm considering it because Tina's going to Rochester to take care of the baby for the weekend. So
you don't want to just enjoy the peace and quiet in the house without her.
I don't know. We'll see.
I'm going to lay a price. You're not there.
Okay.
You're always telling me you're thinking of coming. You never show.
Well, we were just down in New York this past weekend, and
it was great to see you. I enjoyed our time.
I didn't. We were in Brooklyn, and I'm supposed to come. We're expecting to run on the 11th as well. So either way, I will absolutely.
David Aragona says it's close between risk taking and prevalence.
Interesting. So maybe he'll make
risk-taking. Draw could have something to do with it. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
But that's what I figured. I know Waver paid a huge price last time, but how big a price should he be? You know, he's a big, strong horse. I wouldn't rule him out at all. I thought he ran very well last time. I think everybody, you know, a lot was focused on Crowder Trader. Obviously, he ran well as a second start, and you know, highly motivated, et cetera, but why should we ignore Wayburn? I think Jimmy's got a big chance in this race, right? He wanted, 14 with Wicked Strong?
Wayburn's
going to run well in here. I don't see why he shouldn't. He seems like an improving horse. I think what horse I'm looking forward to showing up again sometime, maybe we'll see him at Belmont, is that horse of Tommy Albertrine that beat Wayburn in the main race back at the beginning of the Aqueduct meet, Wolfie something. The horse is a half to. The horse is a half to Sadler's Joy, and Tom ran the horse on dirt. And he ran very well to win his first start.
Dynaghost.
I heard he was working, but obviously, I mean, you have to think something must have gone awry because they after a race like that, you think they're thinking Triple Crown trail. Wolfie's Dynaghost. Dynaghost, right? Wilby's Dynaghost. Yeah, I'll be looking forward to seeing when he shows up again. I heard he was working. Hopefully he... Did Todd mention what he's doing with Untreated? The horse they bought at the Pompa Dispersal?
No, I didn't bring that up.
Oh, well, he ran so well breaking his maiden at Tampa. He was nominated in the Wood. I was wondering if Todd... Maybe they're taking more time with him, Maybe they'll look for an Onwards of One at Keeneland or something.
I had to go through the. Yeah, I didn't see. Yeah, he's right there above Wayburn, Untreated.
Yeah, no, I just noticed that he was nominated, and I know at one point I heard him not mentioned for all races. I know he's a Team Bauer horse. They bought him. He was a horse that was highly touted before he ever ran, and like the number of horses, he just didn't run at Gulfstream, but he certainly ran well at Tampa. Yeah, he's an interesting horse at some point going forward. You know, you think about these races, and you know, his horses, you know, look at who the top older horse theoretically in this country is right now, Mystic Eye, and he's a horse that he didn't run the Triple Crown races. He was, you know, he sort of saw him in that allowance race at Belmont, and, you know, and he finally, they took their time with him. So, you know, there are good horses out there that aren't going to be in these Triple Crown races, that's for sure.
Andy, a couple of beyond this group, we should touch on a few of the New York stories that came out of the weekend, and none was more remarkable than the Eric Cancel rally to win the riding title. I mean, that was about as improbable a sequence of performances.
Well, down six wins with 10 races left to be run, going to the ninth race on Saturday, and he won eight races in eight of the next nine races. Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, I feel bad for Kendrick, to be honest. I mean, if you're Kendrick, you're thinking this has been a great winter. It was a great winter for Kendrick. It doesn't take away that Kendrick Carmouche had a great winter, and you know, you feel bad the guy's picked to win the title. I mean, at the end of the day, title's exciting, all these things. It doesn't change anybody's life. They both rode very well. I mean, I think that, you know, Eric Cancel has obviously improved his riding a great deal since P.J. Campbell took his book. And I think to ignore the influence that P.J. has had in not only getting live mounts, but being a good mentor to him, you'd be foolish. And, you know, the credit goes to Eric because he's the one that's ridden very, very well out there. But he and P.J. have been a sensational team. You know, P.J. Had a lot of good connections for getting Eric a lot of live mounts, and he's done a sensational job since he took over his book last winter in getting him opportunities. They were doing very well last year when obviously we stopped for the pandemic, and then things get tougher when the big guns come back. And I think for Eric, you know, I hope that this gives him the confidence going forward, because, and I don't want to single Eric out with his other riders, and I understand it, they get a little intimidated when Irad walks in the room or Jose Ortiz or different, you know, other top riders. I think Eric showed, you know, in the same way, look, one thing about Kendrick Carmouche, he doesn't lack confidence. And it's a positive. I mean, you need to be confident in these situations. Any athlete needs to be confident, especially at the highest level. They have to feel that they're as good, if not better, than anybody with out in the field or the court or the track with them. And I think that Eric needs to, you know, use this success to bolster his confidence to say, I can ride with anybody. And listen, he can be best friends with anybody in the room. But when they're on the racetrack, they're not friends. And they're not looking to hurt each other, but they're not looking to help each other either. And I'm not saying helping each other, but also, you know, not be intimidated. You know, I'm every bit as I belong on this track, and if I have the best horse, I'm going to win, whether I'm riding whoever I'm riding against. And I think that sometimes that may be one of the things for younger riders that's difficult, right? Imagine yourself a young rider, and you get in that room, and you look around, Eclipse Award-winning riders, these, you know, guys who have won.
Yeah.
Triple Crown races and Breeders' Cup races. You think, what am I doing here? You know, it's sort of, you know, it's sort of understandable, right?
Yeah.
And I think, so I think once Eric sort of gets past that, I think he has a real chance to see if he, you know, can actually compete year round at a high level on this circuit.
Yeah, no, that's a point. That's a point well made. Because he does seem to be something of a, I'm sure he doesn't, I don't think he would notice, but, you know, he seems to be a lightning rod for criticism sometimes.
I mean, one of the things I liked about Eric a lot when he first came there, Eric's got a lot of personality. You know, if you meet Eric, you think this guy isn't intimidated by anything. But I'm, you know, listen, he rode great this winter. You know, I thought he took a lot of heat. Was it Thursday or Wednesday, Thursday? I think it was Thursday, Friday. Friday, we raced him there one day this week, where he had a big lead on a big favorite, and, you know, people say, oh, he stopped riding the horse. Well, in fact, he did. It's nonsense. If you watch the race, he didn't. And, you know, everybody's whining and stuff, and I've been very critical of Eric at times. On the other hand, in my opinion, I'll be critical if I think it's deserved, and I'll defend a rider if I think he deserves a defense, and I thought Eric got a raw deal on that. I don't think he stopped riding. I mean, if you want to argue, maybe he moved a little soon, but that's always easy to say in retrospect. But the reality was, he was riding that horse. He never stopped riding that horse. And, you know, then you put the stick away. Well, what's he supposed to be banging away on a horse that's up by six lengths at the 16th pole? Is that a good look? Some of these same people would say, why was the guy continuing to hit the horse the 16th pole? And he continued to ride the horse, and he was going forward. It's nonsense. So he got caught at the end. He's not a very good horse. It was a horse that was dropping off a layoff. Big, big shock on the mile off a layoff dropping. The horse got tired at the end, and I thought he caught a raw deal on that. So it was kind of nice to see the vindication for him. And, I don't want to take away from what Kendrick did this winter. It doesn't diminish the winter that Kendrick had just because Eric Ancel happened to have that amazing two-day run. Kendrick still had a great meet. I'm sure he's frustrated. But at the end of the day, still a lot of races. They both made a lot of money in purses, and that's you know, those winnings certainly they certainly assuage a lot of the defeat. And they're competitive guys. You want to win the title. You know, Kendrick's the one with a 6.6 likely the 16th pole in this race. Is it his fault he lost? No, it's not his fault. Eric was on better horses. I don't think he rode them better than Kendrick did. He was on good horses. But Eric has done a very good job this winter of paying attention to track bias and giving his horses the best chance to win. And PJ's done a good job of getting him on horses that can win. So they were a very good team together. You know, no jockey is going to achieve success without an agent that's helping him get on good horses, especially younger riders.
Well, of course, the landscape changes with Gulfstream wrapping their winter season. And
they go to the summer championship, right?
That's... we call it the championship intermezzo.
Yeah, we're finished. We just finished the winter championship meet at Aqueduct, and we're getting ready for the spring championship meet, right? The Belmont spring summer championship meet, then the Saratoga summer championship meet, and then the fall championship. At both Belmont and Aqueduct. You're all winners. Very important for everybody.
The greatest way.
Why are we named them the participation meets?
Exactly. I want to get one Dubai note in because you were singing the Mystic Guide praises maybe before anybody on the pundit front.
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people do.
No.
I think one of the reasons I talked about him was not specifically, and I've been a fan for a while, was that I thought it was sort of strange that everybody was talking up Maxfield when I thought Mystic Guide was a better horse, and they were both Godolphin horses. And, you know, I talked about it on Twitter, and a lot of people got miffed at me, and how could I not recognize the greatness of Maxfield and this slew of 98 buyers? When Mystic Guide was running second in the Happy Saver, and I'd love to know from Todd, by the way, how Happy Saver's doing. I know they had said after Gold Cup they were going to give him a break until spring, so I hope he's back and working. I don't really know. But I'd love to see him back. I mean, if Mystic Guide is the top horse in the country, why couldn't Happy Saver be in that conversation? I'd love to know where he is from Todd. But regardless, I don't think his ascension is that smart. Listen, let's be honest. I can't tell you for sure, but I take my chances that that was the weakest Dubai World Cup that was ever run. That's not a knock on Mystic Guide, but come on, that was an atrocious field. Especially for, you know, a high, you know, huge race, and they managed to get some pretty good horses, and there weren't even interesting Euros in there particularly. And Mystic Guide's a very nice horse. He's still got a lot to prove to be as show he's as good as some horses that have won that race. And listen, for all the, you know, the Silver Charms and the Cigars and the Dubai Millenniums and the Arrogates, there are a slew of well arms in there too. Having said that, it wasn't a particularly good field. But I think Mystic Guide had every chance to be a top horse. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, let's hope that there are other horses emerging in the older horse division. And one of them could be Happy Saver. And hopefully he comes back. He's four before, and he's run well in all his races. So I don't know. But, you know, I was surprised by a comment that we pointed the Whitney and the P Classic. I imagine they run the Whitney. They wait a few more weeks and run them in the Jocko Gold Cup, right? Saratoga.
Well, and I discussed it yesterday with Stidham, and the one reason that the Pack Classic is brought up, obviously, is to get a run over Del Mar.
Oh.
You know, ahead of
British.
They got
funny dirt there? Well, Eric ain't running Del Mar? Well, I guess he did. Yeah, okay, whatever. All right. I don't even remember where he won the. I don't even know where he won the. Was that Santa Anita or Del Mar? Or what else? I'm looking forward to seeing him run again. But I think it was just more that I never understood the love for Maxfield, and I was surprised that he was so much more popular than Mystic Guy, who just seemed to me, if you had an unbiased opinion, that he was the likely better of the two. That was all. Not a Max is not a nice horse. He's just not as good as Mystic Guy.
Well, listen, Andy,
I'm not sure the way he ran, if he had run in Dubai, that he couldn't have won the race. Would have been closer, but he might have won. I mean, what happened to Jesus' team in the Dubai race?
I don't know. I thought he was in good position, and he just sort of idled the late stages. He just didn't have any punch late.
Were you aware of the great connection in the Dubai World Cup? The third place finisher?
No. What do you mean?
The dam Indy 500.
Oh, well, of course. I brought. Yeah, I didn't think of Minicus. I just thought of Bobby Barbera. But
think of him. Boy, that's really sad.
I tell Minicus I'm sorry.
No, it's too late. You calm yourself.
Who he's disappeared.
I think he's probably pretty hurt.
Andy, before we go, I will mention we got the answer on Untreated. Todd didn't mention it, but Untreated was entered in the Bluegrass, and.
Okay.
He drew the two hole, and he managed to land Joel Rosario.
Who? What post did the others get? How many are in there? Eight?
Nine. Here's your field for the Bluegrass Saturday. The one hole, Hidden Stash, Vicky Oliver and Bayerano. Untreated drew the two. The Highly Motivated drew the three with Castellano. Essential Quality, the four, Louis Saez. Rombauer with Ferlant Giroux in the five. Leblon with Albin Jimenez is the six. Hush of a Storm, after not running in Turfway Saturday, the seven, Sitting on Go, the eight, and Keep Me in Mind in a late decision from Diodoro is the nine.
Well, it wasn't that late. They announced it a day or two ago, right?
That's late enough in the process, yeah. Field of nine for the Bluegrass.
Thank you. Okay,
not at all.
Your next guest?
Bill Gallo.
Give Bill my best. Tell him I look forward to seeing him in Sarasota.
He may be lurking in the background, actually. So okay. He heard it. He heard you himself.
Well, see you later. Hi, Bill.
And thanks. Andy Serling, everybody. And back Thursday at Aqueduct. And turf season starts on Friday. Turf season started for the Hoppers on Sunday with a point-to-point. And I failed to give you advance notice myself on Friday. I thought of it later in the day. Bill Gallo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are we doing?
Excellent. And after such a burdened and just frustrating season year last year, and obviously there's still, you know, some decisions and crowd control questions to be answered, but it does feel like this will be a more orderly national steeplechase season than last year.
Well stated. We're going to give it our best. I mean, we managed to get through last year. It was pretty horrific. We salvaged at the end. I think we had eight meets, eight of 28. Thank God we went to Saratoga very briefly to Colonial. But we have really, gone back to the drawing board. And it's not going to be the exact same schedule. We've done a lot of shuffling of the deck for the spring season for obvious reasons. Some of those early meets were a little reluctant to get started. So we've delayed some of the, basically delayed the start of the season for about a month. We did start last Sunday with a kind of a soft opening at the point-to-point in Pennsylvania, but the real racing gets going on April 10th. and we've got one race meet every Saturday for the spring, right through incredibly June 26th, which was one of the major changes of Iroquois, which normally is the second Saturday in May, is moved all the way to June 26th. That's our premier meet for the spring, and it's going to kind of build up to Iroquois, and they're going to close out the spring session on June 26th, a little later than normal, but still. We've got 13 of the 16 normal spring meets scheduled. Shuffled the deck a little bit, as I said, and we moved some around. Some stayed in place, like the Queen's Cup is always on that fourth Saturday in May, in April, I'm sorry. So we're really looking forward to it. The horsemen survived last year, which was a very difficult task to do. They're anxious to get going. We've got plenty of horses in training. Got a lot of good things going on, actually. And really, one of the brightest things just recently, a couple of things happened with NYRA. We're going to have our regular program at Saratoga, going back to our normal purse structure, which was back to the 219 levels, which is significantly higher. We certainly appreciate that. And concurrently, we're going to go to Colonial Downs, and hopefully without any hiccups at Colonial, we're going to race every Monday, two races every Monday in July and August at Colonial. So it's an almost full spring schedule and a very full summer schedule. And then let's just hope everything's normal or as close to normal as possible for the fall, and then we'll get right back on our normal schedule for the fall.
Well, let's back up for a minute. You buried the lead for those of us that have been unable to go to Nashville for Iroquois. The opportunity to go in June instead of between Derby and Preakness, this is a monumental piece of news.
Good. Well, we'd love to see you out there. It's a wonderful meet. It's going to be a little sticky and hot, but they prepare very well and they take good care of the horses out there. But it's a wonderful race course. It's in a place called a public park called Percy Warner Park, just outside of downtown Nashville. And it's a great, great event. Love to have you come.
I've always wanted to go, and every year I'm beaten about the head and face by Clancy. Sean beats me up for not being able to figure out a way to go from Louisville to Nashville to Baltimore adroitly. this certainly makes it easier. I'm excited, and Tina wants to go to Nashville in the worst way. That's on her list, actually. So I think this is exciting.
That would be great. We'd love to have you. You'll enjoy it.
That's what I hear. Everybody raves about it, and one of the big
Just one of the traditional moves. And we went the Virginia Gold Cup, which is always Derby Day, the first Saturday in May, but they moved to May 29th. That's how fearful everybody was for the COVID situation.
Interesting.
Middleburg actually, when Gold Cup vacated that date, Middleburg, which normally is the third Saturday in April, they moved to May 1. So they're on Derby Day in Middleburg, Virginia. So we've got, as I said, we really kind of shuffle things around. But when you look at it, respectively, it looks kind of good on paper. It's just about a month of delay, and we're going to get all these race meets in. Hopefully, they can have crowds. They're all planning on having some crowd, some degree of a crowd, and hopefully by June 26th, they can. I'm not sure how many people will be allowed to go to Percy Warner, but let's hope it's 50% or greater. Which it's a beautiful, beautiful event, but. We're really looking forward to the season. We got such a kick in the belly last year, and we really our owners and trainers really they deserve a break, and they deserve some positive things happening this year.
There's no doubt. And, you know, we tried to build it up as much as possible. And, of course, you know, the in a lot of ways, the greatest indignity came with all the planning and all the effort that Guy Torsiglieri had put forth for Far Hills, you know, for that 100th meeting, right. Historic and special. Now, at least, it feels like he'll be able to, you know, plan and execute, you know, the 100th session. He was hoping for what, $1 million in purse money. And, you know, there was so much that things were building up toward. It feels like they'll be able to, you know, plan and execute, you know, as they were hoping.
Yeah, they are hopeful, but it's not going to be the 100th celebration that they were planning for 5 years. Literally, Guy and I have been planning it. And, you know, obviously he plans the event. I was kind of talking about and scheduling and recommending racing and purses. And so they took a real heavy hit last year by not running. And, you know, they're very close to New York City, a lot of issues. So they're cautiously optimistic to bring it back this fall, not at the levels we had talked about. It'll take us a couple of years to kind of get back to that. They need a couple of really good financial years to support that type of purse structure. But if they're still going to be our championship meet in the fall, third Saturday, the date's all set. I think it's the 16th of October. And, you know, it'll be wonderful. I don't know if we're going to have a $450,000 feature race. That might not be realistic for 2021. But at some point, he's going to reach that level, that million-dollar level, and it'll be something else.
Yeah. Well,
the other newsworthy thing I had to tell you, I'm sure you knew about it, but in fact, you were one of the people that suggested it some time ago, but we've renamed the stake at Saratoga.
This yes.
It got a lot of attention, and I'm very pleased about it. Naira couldn't have been better about it. I talked to Martin about it. And, I even talked to Dave Granning about it to get his blessing, but we renamed the New York Turf Riders Cup the Jonathan Shepherd Stakes, which is a tremendous tribute to a terrific horseman, somebody that's recognizable throughout the industry. He retired last year, as you know, retired on top as the champion trainer for 2020, but he, after a long, illustrious career, he's retired, and I think it's a wonderful thing that we can honor him right now in retirement with this significant Grade 1 race at Saratoga.
Absolutely, and the original suggestion came from a guy by the name of Mike Adams on Twitter, and I promised him that I'd forward it to you, and that's what got it going, and it made perfect sense. Normally I'm not a big fan of you know, rebranding stakes, but in this particular case, it you know, really there was nothing holding together a Turf Riders Cup. I mean, this is a much more appropriate honor when you've got somebody that was a seminal figure in the, you know, not just in the steeplechase game. I mean, just as a trainer, period, in North America, it just seemed unnatural. So I'm thrilled it worked out this way.
Yeah, I think it was 84, 85. He was back-to-back leading trainer at the meet at Saratoga.
Right.
Obviously included a couple of jump wins, but he was winning at a nice pace on the flat as well. But it's a perfect honor at the perfect moment, quite frankly. He's
well, yeah, that's right. You'd rather do it while they're on this side of the turf.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're real excited about that. We're real excited about putting on a good show up at Saratoga again. And as I said, that Colonial meet complements us beautifully because it's, you know, there's non-conflicting races. We race two races every Monday at Colonial, and then we race either Wednesday or Wednesday and Thursday at Saratoga. So we're going to be busy throughout the summer. We've got a lot of maiden races at Colonial, and those horses launch into the Saratoga meet mid to late Saratoga. We've got a nice filly and mare stake in mid-August at Colonial. So a lot of positive. We needed some positive things to happen, and they're happening now, and everybody's relieved and excited, and really can't wait for the season to start.
There's also, and you can, I haven't asked you about the details of this, but I did see that you're trying to get some social media frivolity involved with a fantasy stable concept, and you know, they're trying to do some more interactive activities.
Yeah, you hit it on the nail on the head. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do. Promotion and growth, I guess they call it. And we're trying to reach out and find some people that aren't aware of steeplechasing and kind of connect with them and get them following our circuit. We created the NSA Racing Club. We've had incredible response to it. It's a free membership, and when you come into the racing club, you can submit a fantasy stable pick six. You pick six horses. We published the horses in training for the spring, and it's a spring contest basically, with a nice big prize at the end. And it's really caught on. It's only been, we announced it about a week or 10 days ago. We've got over 150 stables already. So it could grow. That information's going to go through social media to our individual mailing lists at each individual race meet. So we have quite a scope of fans out there. They just don't follow the sport regularly. And I think it's going to benefit all at some point. It's going to benefit the individual meets, and it's going to pay a little bit more emphasis on the racing at the non-paramutual sites. Obviously, most of ours are non-paramutual, so you can get a fantasy stable together. In fact, you and Tina should put one together.
Oh.
But it's a lot of fun. It's very simple. You go on our website, and you'll see a button to click for the racing club. Very detailed information, but very easy to pick your six horses, follow throughout the spring, and we're real happy about it.
Nice. I'll send out the link to it, and I want to slip in one before we wrap. One last piece of news that I saw a couple of days ago: Michael Mitchell, who kind of burst on the scene, and is going to retire. I saw.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shocker. Quite frankly, he was scheduled to come back. He was riding first call for Jack Fisher, and it's wonderful. I got to know him last summer, in fact, at Saratoga, when they sequestered our jockeys. His changing room was in my office, just by sheer. So he's a fascinating guy, the ultimate professional, came very prepared, skilled rider, and he decided to retire at a young age of 30, I believe he is. So, good for him, a loss for us. But they're talking about bringing over some other young English-Irish riders, and three or four new ones are hopefully going to come over. So, and we've got a really good core of young American riders as well. Kathy Nielsen has a daughter named Skylar McKenna's. Seems very gifted. Ricky Hendricks has a son called Parker Hendricks, and he seems very gifted. And a trainer called Joe Davies has a young man named Teddy Davies. They're all very young. They're all very talented, and they're all going to advance quickly in the steeplechase ranks.
Well, and the ones you just mentioned all participated in the point-to-point on Sunday at Cheshire.
Yeah, Skylar did win. I think she won that first. Yeah, she won the first race of the year, riding for her aunt, Santa Nielsen. And McLean Hendricks, which is another son of Ricky Hendricks, he won the second division of that race.
So there it is.
We've got a promising young group of riders coming up, which we're very excited about.
Well,
a lot of
excited.
Good things happen to people chasing.
Well, excited that it's going to be a semblance of normality for the steeplechase season, even with a couple of changes and a couple of scheduling nuance. We will keep everybody apprised and check in regularly. Bill Gallo, I appreciate it. Jumping with NSA. Jumping with NSA is the Twitter follow, and of course, nationalsteeplechase.com for all the details. Bill, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate it. Bill Gallo, everybody. Thanks to Bill and Andy Serling, Todd Pletcher, Ron Fauché, Jessica Martini, and Mark Frosted as well. Good luck if you're playing today, Tuesday. Back with you tomorrow. Tony Alivato is going to join us. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus. Replay tomorrow. Talk to you then.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.